Good evening and welcome to this week's show of the Gnostic Waves. My name is Diana Azam, the host of this program, and this is a show that's devoted to all things of a Gnostic nature, and that includes things of a mystical and psychological investigations. So on tonight's program, we're going to be continuing with the book review called Revolutionary Psychology, which is essentially to aim to revolutionize our psychology, our way of thinking, to awaken consciousness, to live better lives, more meaningful lives. And this week, or this show, we're up to chapter 22 called Chatter. But as always, when I do the book review, I go over the last chapter that we've covered. This was chapter 21 called Observation of Oneself. And essentially, the main points of this chapter were that knowing ourselves and observing ourselves are very different. So we can know what we're like, we can know our behavior, we can know that we are prone to getting angry and impatient, but to observe ourselves while we're getting angry, while we are impatient, are completely separate things. And also, the capacity to analyze ourselves and to think about ourselves and our behavior is also not really the same as observing. Although it's going to help us to understand ourselves better and the reasons and the logic behind what we are doing and what we are saying, to actually observe ourselves doing and saying these things, again, is something that's different. So self-observation isn't something that happens mechanically by itself, but something that we learn to do over time. And particularly meditation helps us to develop this faculty. And so with practice, we realize that self-observation is actually a function of the awakened consciousness. So it's like we are observing ourselves, or part of us that's awake is observing the part of ourselves that is asleep. So chatter. In keeping with the strong emphasis on learning how to observe what we are, what's inside of us, what motivates us to act and to think and feel, this chapter invites us to observe how much we are chatting to ourselves. But it's not exclusively the chatter that we speak out aloud, but more so the chatter that we don't say out aloud, that we say to ourselves internally, all day, every day. So the chatter that we say out aloud, in effect, is a direct result of what we're saying inside of ourselves, our internal chatter. So when we understand the extent and the effect of our internal chatter, then we are going to understand why it's important to try and minimize it from the inside first. But before we go into the topic of the internal chatter, I thought it would be worth speaking a bit on the external chatter and the use of the word. And we've talked about this topic a few different times on the program over the years, and emphasizing the importance of being careful with what we say, or becoming conscious of how we use the word. And this is because we plant seeds with our words, and these seeds grow into things that regrettably we wish we hadn't said. Now, of course, there are immediate effects of our words we have to our listener. So if we are in an argument with someone, then we're going to observe the effect of our words straight away. But every word that we use has an effect in some way, shape or form, whether we realize it or not, whether we find out that effect or not, it has an effect. So for example, things that people tell us many years ago, we remember. So for example, like what our parents used to say to us. So often we might hear ourselves talking like our parents used to and think, wow, I sound like my parent. This is because everything that they're saying is going into the subconscious, and our subconscious is a lot more elaborate and better at retaining information than the conscious part of our mind. So all this information goes into the subconscious and it has an effect on us without us realizing it. So if we can understand the importance of being impeccable with our word. And that phrase I coined from the book, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. So if we understand that in how we speak, we'll also understand the importance of comprehending the effect of the mental chatter and working to minimize it. So in the book, it says, what truly counts in these studies is the manner in which human beings behave internally and invisibly with one another. And that's quite revolutionary in itself, because we think that it's important to behave well externally, to, you know, say please, say thank you, to be nice, to be courteous. But what he's saying in this book is that really we have to understand how we're treating these people internally, because if we understand that, then we're going to benefit a lot more than if we're just courteous on the outside. Which, I mean, we need to be courteous on the outside as well. So, internal chatter. So in the book it says that we need to observe our internal chatter and where it originates. So what is it? Does our internal chatter have an overall negative flavour or a positive flavour? Are we constantly putting ourselves down? Are we constantly putting other people down? So if we understand what we are saying to ourselves on a day-to-day basis, we're going to have a better understanding of the origins of this chatter within us, because it all has an origin. So what are these origins? Just generally, it's the variety of the egos that we have in our subconscious that are talking to us. Or what's probably more accurate is that they are chatting amongst themselves. And we briefly mentioned this in the last chapter about that process of falling asleep at night is when our egos start to become very active and chatting amongst themselves. So this is how we can observe that happening if we're not able to observe that during the day, just watching ourselves sleep, and how our subconscious is chatting amongst itself. So examples of this. So our anger is often complaining about how frustrating things are, how frustrating life is, how frustrating our partner is, how frustrating the mailman is, etc., etc. It can vent its anger at anything, at an animate object and inanimate object. Our pride gets impatient and starts to put the person down who's offended us. Our fear really likes to chat. It likes to tell us how things are going to go terribly wrong. It tells us about the worst case scenario and how we are the only ones who know how to do the job, who know how to fix it. So hopefully these examples, we're getting the idea. When we understand what the ego is saying to us, we understand more about its logic and its reason for existing and what it believes in, what it thinks, how it interprets the situations in life. So it's very essential to know which particular ego originates these thoughts within us. Then we'll know the origin of our internal chatter. So to take that level of self-observation down to as low as we can go to understand the depths of our subconscious. So in the book, it says that many present and future disharmonious and unpleasant psychic states are caused by our own internal chatter. So really, we, as a result of what's going on inside of us, are creating unpleasant circumstances for us. So it's really important that we start to observe and to comprehend what is going on inside of us. And if we don't, we're never going to understand why our lives don't turn out the way we want them to. Okay, so a good opportunity now. We'll take a short music break. So I've chosen the track, Alleluia, Behold the Bridegroom. So we'll be back to continue on with the topic of chatter. So you're back on the Gnostic Waves with Diana. That track was called Alleluia, Behold the Bridegroom. And I'm talking on the topic of revolutionary psychology, which is a book on the chapter called Chatter, which is essentially about our internal chatter and how we need to observe it because it's quite destructive. So just a bit about internal silence. So in this chapter on chatter, it talks about the difference between the mental silence that we achieve in a meditation practice compared to the internal silence that we want to develop when we're faced with the various circumstances in life. And so the author Samaya Onvior wanted to make a distinction between those two. He says that internal silence is achieved when the process of thinking is intentionally exhausted during profound inner meditation. So this is describing the process that happens when we do a meditation practice. We find our mind is full of thoughts from the day, and the amount of thoughts and the speed of the thoughts has a lot to do with the amount of activities we did in the day. You know, if we have a lot of caffeine, it can cause our mind to go at a much faster rate. You know, how much rest we've had, even how well we've eaten. So we find our minds full of thoughts and they want to be heard. But slowly, as we relax the body, as we relax the emotions and focus on the breath, these thoughts start to slow down. And so we're able to separate from them. We can just watch them and not think about them. So in this way, it's described as process of thinking is being exhausted. So to empty the mind or to make it blank in order to achieve this internal silence is not the subject of this chapter. So it's something different to that process of meditation. So what is meant by this internal silence? He says the practice of internal silence does not mean to impede something from penetrating into the mind. The internal silence we want to exercise is related with something that is already in our mind, a person, an event, our business or another's business, what we were told, what such and such a fellow did. But without our interior tongue commenting about these things, without internal discourse. So we can see people in our day and they act in a certain way, but we then have our own internal commentary about what is going on. And so this is what we want to keep silent too. So a huge example is when we're complaining about something to ourselves. So even if we don't voice our complaints out aloud. He says many keep quiet externally, however, their internal tongue skins their fellow men alive. So there's many examples of this. So like our boss tells us to do something that we don't really want to do, and we do it, but we complain about it the whole time to ourselves. So in our own minds, we're complaining about our boss. We're complaining about why they asked us to do it and not, you know, our work colleague next to us who we might think is a bludger and doesn't do much work. So this is what's going on inside of us. Another example is our parent or our partner does something we don't like and we complain and criticize them, but not externally. We just keep it within ourselves. And obviously it's going to have an effect in some way. It's going to affect our body language. Maybe it's going to affect our facial expressions, and it's definitely going to have an effect on how we're feeling. So perhaps even we might make a mistake. So each of us does something and we criticize ourselves. And negative self-chatter is also very common too. So we want to be understand our negative self-talk, because this is very harmful. And it shows how we relate to ourselves, which is useful information for us. Continuing with what is said in the book, if one observes the internal chatter, we will see it is made of half-truths, or truths that are more or less incorrectly related to each other, or things that were added or omitted. And this is the problem. We don't understand that what we say to ourselves, this chatter, is not the whole truth. It's a half truth. It's missing information. It's missing insight, which is crucial to knowing the whole picture. It's missing information from the other person's perspective. Or say, for example, we are complaining because our boss has asked us to do something and not our work colleague. Maybe we don't know that our work colleague is going through a very stressful situation. Maybe they've had a death in the family or a relationship breakup or something that's happened. And so the boss doesn't overload them with work because they're going through something difficult, but they give it to us. But we only see the things from our perspective that our work colleague isn't working very hard, and then we have a judgment of that. So these things are happening all the time. We don't have the whole picture for whatever reason that is. And then we fill in these gaps and we draw conclusions about what is happening, and then we're telling ourselves this. So we're reaffirming our own conclusions all the time, but never really asking or challenging how real they are or how true they are. So this is why the awakened consciousness is important to develop, because it can help us to see these missing bits of information, or at least it can help us to hold our judgment, hold our chatter until we know the whole story, because eventually the truth comes out in the end. So we just need to wait and to give time for the whole picture to form, and not just to draw our conclusions so rashly. So it continues in the book. It says, unfortunately, our emotional life is exclusively based on self-sympathy or feeling sorry for ourselves. So what we need to develop is how to relate to ourselves in the correct way. And this is hard to do, because sometimes we feel sorry for ourselves and this doesn't help us in the situation we're in. It doesn't help pull us out of our feeling of lowness or of depression. And this is quite a hard pill to swallow. So it says in the book, we only sympathize with ourselves, with our much-loved ego. Moreover, we feel antipathy and hatred towards those who do not share in our self-sympathy. So if someone doesn't share our point of view, like say, for example, we have an argument with someone and then our partner doesn't share in that opinion, then we start to think, or we start to feel like a hatred towards that partner because they're not agreeing with our point of view. He says, we are 100% narcissist. So it's very easy to think that we are the center of the universe, because our consciousness is trapped within us, is trapped in this body, in this mind. So I often reflect on how easy it is to think that our opinion or our perspective or our logic is the one that's most superior, because it is applicable for us. It's something that we've spent time on probably, and we trust. But we get trapped in our own perspective, in our own set ways. And it says in the book, as long as we continue bottled up in self-sympathy or really in ourselves, any development of our inner being becomes impossible. So really, if we want to know the mysteries of life and death, then we have to put less emphasis on ourselves, because our being, our higher being, I've come to understand, actually doesn't necessarily care about my perspective or necessarily another person's perspective, but it cares about how we all get along. And so in the being's interest, it's better to have functional relationships and, you know, to understand one another, understand one another's point of views, than it is for us to get fixated on my particular view, or for you to get fixated on your point of view. So we need to develop the capacity to see beyond ourselves, beyond our logic, and beyond this internal chatter that we have. We need to love ourselves. Don't get me wrong. This is something that is quite hard to communicate, is that we need to have love, respect, and dignity, but it's not in the way we think. Like, generally, we see that loving yourself is treating yourself well and, you know, giving, pampering yourself and people being nice to you and telling, agreeing with you and all these things. But sometimes loving ourselves is being kind to ourselves, but sometimes loving ourselves is also knowing how to be hard on ourselves. Unfortunately, it's difficult to know when to do what. And sometimes other people can help us. You know, if they say, you know, just help us to see beyond our scenario, beyond what we're fixated on, can help us. Sometimes people do it in a bit of a harsh way, and so maybe that doesn't help us immediately, but if we reflect on it, it helps us later on, that we realize, okay, I just need to move on, or I need to get over this and to focus on something else, or distract myself with something else so that I'm not getting so worried about, you know, a particular problem in life. So we need to develop this wisdom of when to treat ourselves in a nurturing type of way and validating what we're experiencing, and other times when we're like, no, that's just nonsense. What we're thinking, how we're interpreting life is just nonsense, and we've got to do something to change that. It also says in the book that we need to learn to see others' point of view, and I mentioned this in a couple of points before, is that we often don't see the whole picture, and part of that picture is learning what other people are experiencing. So to see another's point of view, it's a necessity to be able to see beyond ourselves, beyond our own pain and misery that we're suffering. And this is very difficult. And unfortunately, we live in an age where depression is ripe and very common. And depression is tricky because it doesn't let us see past our own pain. So even when we want to understand another person's pain, it's hard because with the depression, it can project how we're feeling onto another person. So we might think that other people are feeling the pain that we're feeling when they might be suffering, but not in the same way. So, for example, we might think that we're letting someone down, and so we feel really, really bad about it. And so we're projecting that how we feel onto them, and oh, they're feeling the same way. Oh my gosh, they're suffering so much. And so then that keeps us actually feeling in a low state when they may not be feeling that bad. They may have felt a blow. Oh, okay. You know, that person didn't do what I wanted to, but then they got over it quickly. So sometimes we need to actually really see how other people's point of view are and not just how we might interpret their feeling, because we can get stuck, doubly stuck, feeling low. We feel low for ourselves, feel bad, guilty, but we also feel bad because we've made someone else feel bad and guilty. So you can see it's a really negative trap. We can get caught in these negative cycles so easily. And so this is why it's really important to actually look at ourselves, what's going on, and to test if what we're experiencing is true or not, and awaken consciousness essentially. So yeah, it's important not to be able to get trapped in other people's sufferings as well, because we can do this. And if we can't separate from another person's suffering, we're not going to be able to help them. But I don't say that we do this in a cold way, as in, you know, I'm not going to feel what you're feeling, but to do it with compassion. So again, as I mentioned before, when we have to learn when to be kind and to ourselves and when to be tough with ourselves, we also need to learn to develop that with other people as well, when they need kindness and when they need toughness. And again, this is really tricky, and there's no real hard and fast rules on how to know when to do this. But we just need to, we need to investigate, do trial and error, and to do it consciously, because we learn from these experiences that we have. So just in conclusion to this chapter, it says in the book, what truly counts in these studies is the manner in which human beings behave internally and invisibly with one another. And I mentioned that before because it's such a profound statement. Unfortunately, even if we were very courteous and sincere at times, there is no doubt that invisibly and internally we treat each other very badly. People who are apparently very generous drag their fellow men into their secret caves of themselves to do whatever pleases them. So, as I mentioned before at the start, we can be nice to people on the outside, but on the inside we treat them a different way. And so we need to really shed light on how we're treating people internally, because this has an effect. It's not like we can hide that. We think we can hide that, as a fellow Gnostic instructor said in a talk last night. We think that other people can't get inside our heads, which is true. They don't know exactly what we're thinking, but these thoughts are having negative effects on us and our life. And as mentioned in this chapter, it causes us to have difficult or unpleasant circumstances. So these are things that we would like to try and change in our lives, just so we can live better, more meaningful lives and get along with everyone better, get along with ourselves better. And by doing this, we help our being, because our being cares about these interactions, how we interact with one another, how we get along, because it gives a more richer experience that our being is looking for. Okay, so we'll go to our next music break. This is a track called Liturgy of St. John by Rachmaninoff. So we'll be back on the other side to do a meditation. Okay, so you're back on the Gnostic Waves. That was a track by Rachmaninoff, Liturgy of St. John. So we're going to enter into a meditation practice now. So getting ourselves ready into our meditation position, or any position that we can sit and relax for the next 20 minutes. Making sure our body has minimal tension. If it helps, we can go scan through the body from our toes to our head, clenching and then releasing all the parts so that we feel relaxed. Particularly in the face, make sure the jaw is not clenched and our facial muscles are relaxed. Someone, another Gnostic instructor, once suggested that if we're smiling when we're meditating, it can help affect our mood. And then working with the breath, taking some deep breaths in, and deep breaths out. Trying to keep our concentration in this moment. The mind likes to drag us out of the moment into the future or into the past, but we want to stay in this moment. It's important that each meditation, whether it's a psychological practice or a mystical practice, starts with a relaxation. Mm-hmm. we like, we can focus in the heart center. In today's practice, we're going to work with the Divine Mother. We use the mantra Ram Iyo. It's R-A-M-I-O. And we're going to do a practice of observing our chatter, our internal chatter. But for the moment, keeping the attention in the heart center, keeping it as open as possible. Okay, so now trying to connect with the Divine Mother in the heart. We use the mantra Ram Iyo. One more. Connecting with whatever we perceive is our Divine Mother in the heart. If we have problems connecting with this force, at least becoming conscious of how the use of this mantra makes us feel. Has it changed our way of feeling? We separated from what we identify as our normal psychology. So now from the point of view of this light, of this separation, we're going to try and observe our internal chatter. But to do this, we're going to bring up a scenario that we want to understand better. So it can be a particular event, circumstance with a particular person. Someone that we have problems getting along with. So each of us can find that scenario. It could be understanding how we are thinking when we wake up. What are our first thoughts of the day? So picking this scenario and trying to observe what is the chatter that's going on at that point of time. So at this stage, we don't want to judge this chatter, we just want to observe it. Don't want to judge it as right or wrong. Just what is it? Can we observe how this chatter leads us to draw certain conclusions about a person or about a circumstance, a situation? And it can draw this conclusion before we even engage with this person, with this situation. So now we can question the validity of these conclusions. So, for example, if we are prone to fear or anxiety, how often do things go wrong? How often is the conclusions that fear draws correct? Conclusions of our anger correct? In some scenarios, it helps to try and comprehend the other person. In this situation, what is their point of view? What is their perspective? Would they agree with our conclusions? And if not, why wouldn't they agree? What is their point? We might not know what their point is. We may be encouraged to try and find out what that point is before we form our own conclusions. So can we see a way that we can separate from this chatter within us? To have our point of reference in the awakened consciousness. To allow the awakened consciousness to fill those gaps of information those gaps that are missing, and that we fill with the reasons and the justification of our chatter, of the ego's logic, of the ego's interpretation of events. This requires that trust and that faith of something higher. Of course, our Divine Mother, who we've worked with in this practice, can help us with this. So now slowly we can finish this practice. Okay, so that practice could go on for as long as you need it to comprehend and to separate from the chatter that's going on in our internal universe, in our internal reality. Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that talk and that practice, and that you got something useful from it that you can work to apply in your lives. That brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for your company, and hope you'll join me again on the Gnostic Wave next week. Okay, until then, good night.